originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Looking forward to the next hour as we visit with another trainer who is just getting started with his career. We'll tell you more about that in just a second. But of course, I am Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside my usual entry mate, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And JT, here we go again. This show is so much fun when we get an opportunity. You know, it's fun when we get to visit with the established trainers, the Pletchers, the Bafferts, the Asmussens. When you bring on somebody who's just getting started and you hear their story, a story that many people don't know, to me, those are really fun shows.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be there right when somebody starts their career, and then when they come back on the air 5 years from now, we can say, we knew you when. Right? And that's happened a lot. So it's really a lot of fun to get people a send-off and get their name out there and put the face with the name in the program, and maybe a prospective owner or two shows up and says, hey, I liked what you said on the radio. Here's a horse for you.
Yeah. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this interview tonight, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. We'll make a podcast available for you as soon as we finish up here, shortly after 7 o'clock Eastern time, and you can listen at your leisure. All right. Well, tonight's guest has just three winners, but he only has 16 starters, so not a bad percentage. All of those coming in 2019. In addition, those numbers include 2 seconds and 2 third-place finishers, so nearly half of his 16 starters have hit the board. And this past Sunday, he recorded his first win at historic Saratoga when New York bred T Loves a Fight, the 5-year-old son of Girolamo, scored in an allowance optional claiming race. So congratulations. He is trainer Orlando Noda, and he is with us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Orlando, welcome.
And greatly appreciate it for everything.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to be with us. You know, I know this is all somewhat new to you. At least training on your own is a bit new to you, but whatever you're doing, it seems to be working, my friend.
Yes, sir. It's little by little. It's just taking the time to pay attention to all the details in this, and just treat every horse like a stake horse, and it'll show up on the racetrack, I feel.
Go back to last Sunday. I mentioned that race, T Loves a Fight, winning the 7th race on the program at Saratoga, that allowance optional claimer. You did an interview on the Fox program with Maggie Wolfendale right afterwards, and you were smiling from ear to ear. You were floating on cloud 9. Take us back to that moment.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, it began with that Junior actually got hurt in a prior race, and the agent called, the RADS agent called us and said, look, put us up. We're like, all right, because Junior already knew the horse, and we're like, man, at least we have a shot. We got a top jock on the horse. And I mounted RADS. I said, send him off the pace. The pace should be quick, and he'll finish for you. You got plenty of horse, and it was a thrill. First start at Saratoga for a win. It was it's just a dream come true. Like, it's just a start.
Is that a dream of yours for a long time to run horses at Saratoga?
Yeah, I actually back in 2017, I was working under Cassie, and I was taking care of a flame away. He was a 2-year-old at the time, come off of a maiden special weight win, and he went his first time as a stake, and that was actually working with him, and we took a picture in Saratoga with Flame Away, and that was like unreal. Even the assistant, I was screaming like I was that day, and the assistant was like, "Oh, just you can calm down. This is not your first. This is not our first win." I'm like, "Yeah, but this is my first win. I'm super thrilled."
Yeah, it's special when you can, you know, when you can finally see your dream become a reality. T loves a fight. You were telling us before we came on air, actually has a really special connotation to that name. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so actually the breeder of the horse, her name is Teresa, and her husband actually got in contact with me in reference to after we claimed them. When we claimed them, a woman came up and said, "Oh, yeah, I've been following this horse. If he ever needs to retire, I'd be willing to take him." Well, the story came back from the husband was that she was actually fighting cancer at the time, and they named the horse T Love the Fight as she was fighting for her life, and she actually beat it at the time. And it just, like, it lifts up her spirits every time that she sees the horse run. And be it that the horse has won three back-to-back, it's just, like, helping her. She wasn't able to get to the race at Saratoga, be it that she actually had a reoccurrence of it and she was actually hospitalized. But it just, when her husband came into the paddock, I was like, "Look, come in the picture. Like, this is all of us. And this is a family. Like, this is a family horse. Like, this is for everyone." So that helped lift up her spirits, and he knows when he's needed the most.
I noticed you train that horse for your family, and sometimes that's hard when you're starting out. You want to do one thing, and somebody in your family wants to do another thing. Has that created any problems for you, or do they leave you alone?
To be honest, everyone has their opinion on training. I'd hear them, and to be honest, at the end of the day, I'm gonna do what I feel is right for the horse. Be it like, for example, my dad was an old-time trainer of train them hard and they'll run hard. I'm more of a more conservative. As long as they show up on the race, why blow out their guts in the morning?
Yeah, if they can do that, then everything else kind of takes care of itself. We're talking with Orlando Noda, who racked up his third career win and his first career win at Historic Saratoga this past Sunday. And just getting started with that training career after spending time with trainer Mark Cassie, as you heard him mention. Orlando, go back to the beginning. You grew up in Miami. Where did the love of horse racing begin for you?
Well, my dad has always had horses just for himself, one or two here and there, ever since like 78. And we actually got into it, me and my brother Jonathan, we actually got into it in 2012 when we went up to New Jersey. Me and him just took off, and we bought what we thought was a good set of horses, which were $5,000 horses. We ended up paying $2,000 a piece for eight of them, which was kind of a big money pit because, be it that, I didn't know much. So my dad was kind of helping us over the phone, and then I went to a training facility in West Hampton, New Jersey, started riding them, started training, and from there on out, we were training under my dad's name. And slowly but surely, we just came along through a lot of issues of, man, it's really tough even to win a race even at a $5,000 level. But we just stick to it, and that year we ended up, I don't know, I think it was 55 races, and I believe it was four wins, a whole bunch of seconds and a couple thirds, but it was the thrill of horse racing when they crossed the line that just, like, it was an instant hook.
Yeah, it's that adrenaline rush that you get when they cross the line. I've said that quite often, that if you could take that feeling and you could bottle it, this would be the market in the world. Do you agree?
Oh yeah, no, that 2 minutes of racing, it's where all that time and effort goes into when that horse crosses that finish first. Like, it's It's a lot of work behind the scenes just for one race.
Well, you sent me a text after I had asked you to join us on the program here, and you said, thank you so much for the opportunity to express the effort that goes into winning races. So what does it take to get a horse ready to win races?
I feel you just have to treat every horse independently, but actually pinpoint what they need when they need it. And just, even if they're a $5,000 claimer or a stake horse, just treat them all like stake horses. They will show up. Good bed, good food, and just hands-on, tender, loving care. I feel they'll give it back to you when it comes to the race day.
Yeah, it's always a balance to try to figure out, you know, what distance, what class, what exercise the horse needs, how much to train him, how little to train him, and it can vary from day to day, from month to month, from year to year. Bobby Frankel taught me a horse might be one way 1 year and a totally different horse the next year. Have you found that to be true?
Oh yeah, no, and that's the truth. Be it that I did start in Ocala breaking babies with Harley and Lorenzo and croupies, I went to Ocala to learn what the big outfits were doing, how to start the babies, because I actually bred one of the horses that I initially had started with. I bred her in Florida, and I had the foal, and then I was breaking her myself. And it was just an ongoing process of learning all the aspects of horse racing from the beginning all the way to the racetrack that has gotten me this far. And all the experiences of all the other trainers and that have crossed my path, that you have to be open-minded in this industry to actually absorb like the information that other people are actually have known for many years, but are just, because some people will share some information and other people are more like, oh no, just find it out on your own. So
Who are
trial and error with horses?
Orlando, who are some of those trainers that you've been able? I know you work with Mark Cassie, but outside of Mark, who are some of the other trainers that you've been around that you've been able to kind of learn and watch and observe and pick up things from them?
Well, like I say, I was breaking babies under Johnny Sacco at Croupies Newcastle, just starting out with the babies. And it's a different aspect of trying to get a horse ready for a two-year-old sale and actually taking them all the way to the track. It's more all press for speed and see if they hold up. But then you have the concept of Cassie. I want to have the classic runner where they have top dollar horses. And then I also worked for, it's another company, PickView LLC, which she was the one who actually bred my mare when I initially brought her to Ocala. And he was the more hometown, him and his wife, with Joe and Courtney, would actually break their own babies and take them to the sales. But they were 85% or 90% of their horses came out to be winners out of the sales. So there was many aspects that I learned in that part. And then when I actually took my filly, GT Sonia, to Nelson Jones, I was working with a gentleman, Lane Hendry, and he was in the sales more so, but then he started getting into the racetrack and kind of me and him, he was helping me out and I was helping him out. So we kind of put our heads together and like, okay, this works for this horse and that works for that horse. So it was... And also my dad, at the end of the day, he always has his opinion. So I do take that into consideration. But it's just an ongoing process. As even if when I came up to Aqueduct initially, Michael Tanuzzo was there by in my same barn and giving me advice. Even though they're trying to do their best of teaching me where they have gone wrong, so I wouldn't take that same route. Like, it were some things that I still did, not necessarily wrong, but in the fact of maybe pressing them too fast, too early, got some shins. We had a pin fire, you know, time, this, that, the other. But it was it's still an ongoing learning process, and I haven't worked for the biggest trainers, but I just felt like I have researched and developed my knowledge around people that have been in this industry a long, long time.
Yeah, you know, when I started training, it was a different game. I'm twice as old as you, and I just was very fortunate to have trainers that were willing to take me under their wing or answer any questions I might had. And I asked a lot of questions, and I learned a lot of things. And it's not like that as much anymore. But I think for the most part, trainers like to share with the young trainers coming up their insights on things. And I think you learn every day. And even you talk to trainers like Richard Mandela, he's always talking about, you know, I learned this about this horse, I learned that. And you know, he's in the Hall of Fame, and he's learning every day too. So it's a game where, you know, the horses speak to you, but you got to learn the language. And I think a lot of trainers will help you. So I would recommend keep asking those questions, because even right. if they shoot you down, there's going to be plenty of them that answer you, and it can really make a big difference in your life.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I do take into consideration, is just the more you ask, the more you're going to learn. It's not the fact of, oh, well, what if I didn't do this, or let's just find out. Even I've gotten really good information from my farrier, my vet, just from their experiences and other people that have been in this industry. Like, I have a filly that has yet to run, and the breeze rider, he says, man, she looks like she has a fast turn of foot. You should try her on the turf. Well, I come to find out, one of the guys here, he's like, hey, look, courageous cats are known for their turf horses. Maybe you should try her first time out on the turf. And it's just a coincidence that the rider told me, I mean, she has like a turf stride. I was initially thinking, oh, let's just try her short on the dirt. But I took that into consideration, and now we're going to try her on the turf first out.
Yeah, it's trial and error, and we've had several right. trainers tell us that on this program. You know, you get a sense, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, Orlando, but you get a sense of what is going to fit each horse best, but then you still don't know until they actually do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, the only thing you don't know is the heart that a horse has. Until it races, that's when you'll find out what type of race horse you have, I feel.
So
that's one thing you can't train is heart.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about breeding horses when you were in Florida and breaking horses, the babies at Croupy's Newcastle Farm. You're only 30 years old, so I'm kind of curious, when you were very young, as a kid, growing up in that Miami area, was this all you ever wanted to do, or were there some other things that at certain points you said, well, maybe I can make a go at this or that or whatever it might be?
Yeah, like I said, my dad has always been into this, so it has caught my attention, but before that, I was actually a completely different field work. I was a commercial fisherman. I had a Forrest Gump, Bubba Gump shrimp company, and I had a fleet of boats, and one thing led to another, and it was going good, and we ended up going that route, and I had the business for about 4 years, ended up selling out, and then got back into the horses, because I had my baby coming up as a two-year-old, so... And that's where I focus my energy, and still to this day, you just got to keep pushing forward in whatever industry it is.
Which is harder, training horses or catching fish?
I can say it's very long hours on both jobs, but one was a night job, one was a during all day job, but. Both of them I did enjoy. I'm not one to shy away from any type of labor work, and that's where I come into play in this industry. Like, my brother is the one who actually financially backs me up with this dream of mine of becoming a successful trainer, and We bought a couple babies, got claimed some. And if it wasn't for my brother as an owner, I wouldn't be where I'm at today either. So.
Yeah, so what is a bigger challenge, though, catching the fish or learning how to train these horses and getting them to win?
I think this is more of a challenge because each horse is individual. Fish and whatever, they actually just migrate to certain spots, certain times of the year, and you already have it charted out, and it's just labor. But I think training horses, I must say.
What kind of fish would you catch?
What's that?
What kind of fish would you catch?
I was actually a commercial live shrimp, like for the bait stores that had the live shrimp.
Yeah.
And for the New York seafood market, that they would actually ship them from Miami in the airport to the live seafood market here in New York.
Well, you know, we did an interview on the same show with David Fox years ago, and David is a big fisherman. He likes to go out on his boat down there in South Florida. And David did the interview from his boat, which I thought was the only time we've ever done an interview with anybody that was out on a boat. And that was kind of cool. But as you're doing that and you're building that business, were you still able to follow the horse racing side of things?
Oh, of course. The biggest follow of mine was California Chrome. I liked the horse ever since he won the Santa Anita Derby. And I told my brother, hey, we're going to the Derby. And we went to the Derby that year. And when he won, it was like crazy because how are you going to, how is anyone, that's like every horseman's dream. You have a so what mare and you put him with a not so great that you don't know what's going to happen and you get a superstar horse. That's like the horseman's dream. And that's what I always dreamed of and figured for even my filly. Like, she's Breeders' Cup nominated, Florida Stallions nominated, this, that, the other. And you always hope for the best and just do with what you got. But, yeah, no, we followed California Chrome to Kentucky. When he won, he actually paid my trip to the Belmont and to the Preakness. So, yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is, huh? Well, yeah, you know, that was interesting. At the beginning of the interview, you said, you know, you treat them all like stake horses. And I think that's a great philosophy. I mean, start with the stakes book and work your way back, right? I mean, you got to have some goals and aspirations for every horse, even horses that you claim. And you know, sometimes people say, oh, that's a daydream or whatever. But you might claim a horse that you think will improve on the grass, and pretty soon, you know, he's winning graded stakes. So that's how you get ahead is dreaming big and working hard to reach those goals. And I think that's a good philosophy to have.
Yep. Little by little.
Yeah, and it's coming together little by little.
Just paying attention to the details.
Yeah, and he certainly does that. He is Orlando Noda, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. You heard him talk about starting out with a shrimp boat company and now picking up winners at Saratoga. So if you do have that dream, as Jude mentioned, and you're willing to work hard to go get it, it'll happen, and it's happening for Orlando. And don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, just head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this program and all of our shows at your leisure. They're there at horseracingradio.net. Orlando, when you were breaking babies with J.J. Krupe's Newcastle Farm, J.J., of course, passing away just recently, back in May, did you get a chance to spend much time around J.J.?
Yeah, he was mostly just at the stand, and but yeah, no, he was a really, really good guy, kind of really strict, but at the end of the day, that's how you have to be with an operation so big like him. And it was just another experience of what they did in reference to the babies. They did it different than Harley and Lorenzo, and Harley and Lorenzo did it then different than Mark Cassidy in Ocala Farm. It's just the differences of opinion on training babies.
Do you remember, he's had some really big name babies that have come through that program. Did you get on any of those big time horses?
that I can remember, no, off a hand,
yeah,
because it was usually you just go from barn to barn and okay, get on this and get on 26, get on 28. Like, yeah, you might have known the mayor's name, but really they weren't named at the time. So if you really were to follow the mayor and then see what the name was, then maybe so. But offhand, no.
What's the key to breaking a youngster the right way?
Patience is key. When you rush them, I feel that the harder you press them so early on, the shorter their racing career will be.
Yeah, it's very important to take your time, because those early lessons carry with them their whole life. So,
right.
Not only when you're training them, but when somebody else is training them, you can tell right away if you get a horse in your stable that was ill broke, as they say, and it makes a huge difference, because sometimes you even have to start over because they're not easy to deal with.
Right.
Orlando, did you ever have any thoughts of becoming a jockey?
Nah, I weigh 160 pounds, 6 foot tall.
That's a lot of reduction.
The one who needs to be a jockey is my wife, Melanie. Weighs 104 pounds, 5 foot nothing, and she used to jump. She used to be an equestrian, but she just rather walk and take care of horses and watch on the sidelines. Don't get me wrong, she did get on some of my horses when I was in Ocala, but just every now and then, just to get the urge out that she wanted to ride. Like, even here in the schedule, she'll schedule some horses for me, but she just doesn't want to ride. But
was she there with you Sunday at Saratoga?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that had to be a special moment for the two of you.
Oh, yeah. No, and realistically, we actually got credit for Junior Alvarado because of her dad. Her dad is a really big trainer in Venezuela, Lenin Cruz. And he actually, with his connections, we were able to mount Junior up onto the team, because Junior had actually rode for her father in Venezuela. That's how small this world is.
Wow, that's a great story. And it's, you know, it just shows that oftentimes things come full circle, and they're doing that for our special guest here tonight, Orlando Noda. Orlando, stay with us. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back, continue this visit on the other side of the break. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fegsit Tipton.
Nominations are now open to the Fegsit Tipton November Sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. The sale annually produces the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world, and in 2018 sold 22 horses for $1 million or higher. Held the Monday after the Breeders' Cup, this one-night sale offers leading racing and broodmare prospects, proven producers, and selected yearlings in the most electric atmosphere you will find at any thoroughbred auction. Nominate your best today, the Fegsit Tipton November Sale, where stars shine brightest.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fegsit Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Past a 44.69 half, these three will turn for home together. 3.5 lengths back to T-Love's A Fight, who is next on the outside and starting to put in a bid as they arrive at the gate pole. Binkster in front. Sudden Surprise tries to fight on. T-Love's A Fight continues to progress down the middle. Binkster to catch at the 16th pole. T-Love's A Fight ranging up alongside. Here's T-Love's A Fight right on by. T Loves a Fight beats Pinkster on the wire. Zonic charged late for third, and Cheratoto was fourth.
Larry Colmus with the call. That was T Loves a Fight taking the seventh race at Saratoga this past Sunday. The five-year-old son of Girolamo scoring in that allowance optional claiming event for trainer Orlando Noda, who is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Orlando just getting started with that training career, at least training on his own. As you heard him say in the first half of the program, he's been aboard horses, breaking babies for a very long time. He has bred horses. He has spent time working with trainer Mark Cassie and now getting things started on the right foot with his training career, having won three of his first 16 starts and not too shabby percentage there. Orlando, let me ask you this question, my friend. You talked about the relationship with your wife. We talked about working with Mark Cassie. Are there things that Mark has taught you or that you picked up on being around him that you're still using with your operation?
I would say so. I think I learned a little bit from everyone and take what I feel is right. The thing I would say is when you have superstar horses like Cassie has, it's a very different than when you're trying to claim something and you just don't have that type of crop. But yeah, no, you just got to take care of them at the end of the day. That's pretty much take care of them and at the end of the day, there's a lot of competition everywhere. But you just have to compete with the best, even if it is against Mark Cassie one day.
Yeah, what's that like when you have to go up against them now?
Oh, I see him in Saratoga, oh, he's like, oh, congratulations and everything. So that's the plan. I'm a small operation right now with my own horses and just trying to get some owners. And slowly but surely, I hope to get a good set of crops, too.
So how about when you're on the other side of the fence and you're watching Mark have success in big races, winning the Preakness and the Belmont this year, for example? What's that like for you watching somebody who meant so much to your career have success in those big races?
No, that's what it comes down to. That's what everyone dreams of, is winning a Derby, winning a classic race. And no, and for him to be in this industry so long and to finally be able to win, and it's really a dream come true for anyone. So we all aspire to do as that. So no, it was a thrill. Of course, my wife was working for Cassie before I took on a little bit of more horses. When I had four, I was just doing everything by myself, and then she was working for Cassie here in New York. And so, of course, we were rooting for Cassie's horses when Sir Winston crossed the line. We were all screaming for Cassie because we're Team Cassie. I took a picture with Cassie.
That's great.
You mentioned your wife, a daughter of a trainer, working for Cassie. How important is it to have your wife, your life partner, be interested in horse racing and understand the hours and the lifestyle involved?
We actually met in Ocala at a farm, and she, as I, have a passion for horses, and that passion is what kind of attracted us. Like, we didn't know that both of our fathers were trainers, but we just loved horses, and then one thing led to another. Man, your dad's a trainer? Yeah, my dad's a trainer. And yeah, and we put in a lot of hours, but we do it because we love the horses. We love the sport. And that's the type of people that I want to have in my circle of workers, not just someone that's, like, willing to work for a paycheck and just do the bare minimum. I'd rather be, like, someone like that actually is here for the horses, and that's the most important part to be successful in this, I feel.
Orlando, in the first half of the show, you talked about, you know, starting off and having your shrimp boat company before you decided to make the transition into training racehorses. I'm sure when you did that and you built that company, you had a business plan and you looked ahead and you tried to forecast where you were going to be 3, 4, 5 years up the road. How about with the training side of things? Where do you see yourself, or where would you like to be 3 or 4 or 5 years from today?
Oh, it's just like Rudy Rodriguez told me. Look, I started the same way as you. I was on horses. I started out with 2-3 horses, and it's just a coincidence that yesterday I got my first owner. He gave me 2 horses. Yeah, I like what you're doing. Could you take on 2 horses? I said, sure. I had just hired a groom 2 days prior to me going to Saratoga to help around. And he says, just keep doing what you're doing, stick with it, and your outfit will grow with due time.
Yeah, it'll grow. There's no doubt about it. Where do you want to be? Do you want to have like a Steve Asmussen type of operation where you have horses all over the country, or do you want to be a little bit more boutique?
I'd rather be more together. I'd rather have my barn so I can pay attention. Of course, once you build a reputation like those trainers, of course, then you put your trust into your assistants and to everyone working under you. But that's the type of team I want to build together and then have them branch off into the future. But mostly it's for now, and hopefully in the next 3 years, I wouldn't want to take on any more than 30, 40 horses. And another big influence of mine is Joseph Safi from Gulfstream, which is good friends with my brother. He's actually gave me a lot of tips and helped me out with a lot of issues that I've come up with. And he's a young trainer as myself, and he said the secret in this industry is you just have to put the horses where they win, and when your win percentage and your percentage is high, believe me, people are going to be approaching you. And he said it once. I went after Saratoga. Look, that's a big step for you to win in Saratoga. So just be prepared to take on some clients. So I was like, oh no, thank you so much. And sure enough, the following day I had my first client.
Yeah, it's good. Safi's a good guy, and he won the Barbados Triple Crown at a very young age, and it's taken him a few years to get a really good foothold in South Florida. But I mean, he's one of the kingpins now, and he wins races in bunches, and all his hard work, because there's never anybody who works as hard as he does. I mean, every time you go out in the morning, he's out there on his golf cart going back and forth to the track and arguing with his dad. He's got a lot similar situation to you. His dad's always telling him what to do. And they have their little spats every morning. It's kind of cool, but he's done such a great job, and he's a wonderful person. He's a good friend of our show, and he's done a lot for us, and we really like Safi Joseph.
Little by little,
you chip away, and then all those little things add up to big success. You mentioned during the short commercial break there, Orlando, that you're getting ready to saddle a horse coming up this weekend at Saratoga by the name of Riot Worthy, a horse that you claimed. Tell us a little bit about this horse.
Well, man, talk about backclass. Like, the filly is New York bred, and she has just backclass for days, just stake horse all around. And they gave her 18 months off. I figured maybe they'd try to impregnate her and something happened. First time back, they run her for 12.5. Well, what do I do? A lot of people were really scared. Oh, why are you going to claim a horse that you don't even know? I'm like, hey, for 12.5, I'll take the risk. And sure enough, she's going to be a really good horse. And I plan to run her back where she can win. She finished third her last time out. I'm going to run her back for 12.5, and she should show up.
Yeah, when you claim a horse, he who hesitates is lost is a good rule to go by, because everybody always wants to see one. If you could see one all the time, it'd be a lot easier. But you want to get a good one, you just got to fire away.
Right. And and it's kind of the same reason why we claimed C-Love the Fight was because of his back class. Even though he was running for 10,000 and 12.5, he shows that he can run. And that was another reason why we claimed. We shook on the horse with five other people that same day, and And when I ran him for 40, it was a little bit over his head right there. The same guy who rode him, Harkey, he breathed him, and he worked in 59 in hand. I was like, man, that's a really good horse. He's like, no, if he runs like this, we should win. He finished fourth, and I decided to put Alvarado up. That's when we kind of got the contact with Alvarado. And he says, let's go. And sure enough, I put him in for 12.5. I thought the horse was going to be gone because if you figure four other people shook on him, what's another 2,500 to claim the horse? But no one took him. No one took him for 25, and no one touched him for 40. So now we got a stake horse.
Yeah, pretty cool. How important, Orlando, is that back class when you're looking to claim a horse?
I feel that maybe they were at their prime at one point, and it's sometimes difficult to get them to back where they were. Not every horse can do it, but it just shows that they have heart to be racehorses. Even though they might still be claiming horses, they have heart to run.
You mentioned the name Junior Alvarado several times throughout the program. I know that's something that relationship is something that seems to have worked for you guys. Why is that?
The horse fits him, and it's just he has really good hands, and he was willing to give me a shot when I haven't won a race, when I haven't done nothing huge. And because, to be honest with you, even Mike, his assistant, when I called him before, like, her dad had we had contacted him, he wouldn't ride one of my horses. He's like, oh, no, well, you can put the Bug on. I was like, okay, so I rode the Bug. But slowly but surely, we built that relationship, and it's kind of the same thing that happened with Irad Ortiz. Irad Ortiz was going to ride one of my other horses, Stretch of Stone, but he had the call and everything, and he ended up colicking, and we ended up having the horse scratched and whatnot, but he was willing to give me a shot. Like, it's at the end of the day, you put everything into them as possible to win the race for a jockey just to guide them to the finish. And when the big jocks, they're like, oh, no, I don't have a jet under me, like, it's pretty hard to win races.
Yeah, it's difficult when you're a young trainer just starting out to get some of the top riders to ride because they don't know you from third base, you know.
Exactly.
It's not easy. I remember a highlight of mine was the second winner I had, Bill Shoemaker rode at Santa Anita, and I remember calling the owner. His wife answered the phone, and she says, did we get in? And I said, yeah, we're in the first race on Friday. And she says, who's riding? I said, Shoemaker. And she started screaming into the phone. How did you get Shoemaker? Yeah. I said, I told his agent I'd bet 100 for him. And that horse won. And Sam Dells Lark was her name. And it was like the biggest thing that ever happened to me at the time. That was just unbelievable. But it's hard to get some of those guys. I had a call with a different jockey that was just very mediocre, and he took off, and I didn't have a rider. So I got a little lucky. Harry Silbert took mercy on me.
Orlando, how many horses do you have in training now?
I had 6 personal, and I just got 2.
Okay.
So 8 right now in total, but it's a small crop, but it's very pinpoint. We do everything. Like I said, I just hired a groom like 4 days ago, and he's working out good so far. So little by little, the crop should start growing. And don't get me wrong, I've thrown about 8 tickets in Saratoga. I haven't gotten one yet.
Not good at shakes, huh?
we're good enough to shake the tea, though.
Is it more difficult to claim horses at a meet like Saratoga as opposed to maybe the winter meet at Aqueduct, for example?
Oh yeah, the type of money that's in Saratoga, every race is. Of course, the horses that we're shooting for, 6-7 other people are shooting for. So, if the luck plays your route, then that's where your horse is.
Do you, this show obviously sponsored by Phasic Tipton, do you ever see yourself getting to the point where you're going to, say, a Phasic Tipton yearling sale or a two-year-old in training sale, and you're picking out young horses for different clients?
I do see that, because that's the only possibility to get to the big races. You have to have new crop, two-year-olds, to be able to... Anyway, don't get me wrong. You have to have an eye for a baby to see where its potential growth is and whatnot. And it's just little by little. That's where your dream has to start, is as a 2 year old, or even not so much as a yearling. I wouldn't go that far. I'm not necessarily familiar with breaking the babies, but now that I'm focused more on the racetrack, I would rather a 2 year old in training.
Talking with trainer Orlando Noda here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Just getting started with his training career, he saddled 16 horses. Three of those have won. Orlando, how did you know that the time was right to make the move and go out on your own?
Oh, my filly, it was time for her to run. And don't get me wrong, everyone told me, oh, Why be a little fish in a big pond when you could be a shark and a little fish in the ocean when you could be a shark in the pond? Everyone like would tell me, oh no, New York is so hard. It's really hard to win races. I said, well, I want to try out against the big boys, see what I know and see to compare and see what shows up. And also in New York, you have top dollar horses running for tags that are well worth the money.
If you could win one race, Orlando, what would it be?
The Derby.
Yeah?
Of course.
That's too easy. All right, how about this? If you could train one horse, you get the opportunity to train one horse, past, present, doesn't matter. Which horse are you going to pick?
I got to go with the people's horse. California Chrome.
How'd I know that?
I guess once you have a horse, pay your way to the Preakness in Belmont, it's easy.
Would you have won those races with California Chrome?
Who knows, but I know we would have sure tried. and it's just like when I went to the backstretch the day before the Kentucky Derby, and we went to go see Chrome. We took pictures with the trainer, the galloper, and Chrome himself. And it was just a surreal experience just to be there, just hoping he would win the Derby. And sure enough, he goes and wins.
Yeah, he was a special horse. We developed a great relationship with Alan and Art Sherman throughout that entire run. And Alan is now out training horses on his own, too. Moved to Kentucky, got a place here, and he's starting to train horses on his own. So eventually, he's going to provide more competition for you, my friend.
Hey, we're all open to competition. That's the name of the game.
Do trainers actually have rivals where you have, say, one trainer that, you know what, man, for whatever reason, I just can't beat that guy or that girl when I saddle against them?
So far, I haven't came up to that. I haven't saddled that many. But I don't feel rivalry. I feel we just have to put in the effort. And at the end of the day, luck has a lot to play with this in this game. A lot of trainers believe, oh no, you just got to get them ready. But I feel luck has a lot to play with this. When luck goes your way, you just got to ride the run.
Yeah, it's an up and down game, and you can't get too low and can't get too high. You just have to go with the flow every day. As long as you keep showing up, you got a shot. So,
right.
Do you still do some fishing, Orlando?
Here in New York, I haven't gone fishing just yet. My wife is like desperate to go fishing, but when I went down to Miami, I did go out on my dad's boat and went out to the sandbar. So I'm a have salt running through my veins still.
Yeah, do you think you would be bored if you went out and tried fishing at, say, Lake George or Saratoga Lake? Would that just not be exciting for you?
at the end of the day, fishing is fun wherever you go. Even if you don't even catch nothing, it's just the quality of time that the people you're around with. It's just that's fishing. It's just to pass time and enjoy it.
If you pick horses out like you pick wives, you're going to be very successful. Who ever heard of a wife that loves fishing, loves horse racing? I mean, what a great job you did there.
Oh yeah, no, it's she's an angel. Yeah, she was sent from above, that's for sure.
Great claim, brother.
Yes, sir.
All right, so what's the future hold here for Orlando? I asked you about 4 or 5 years up the road, where you want to be, what you want to do, but immediate future, what are the plans for the rest of this year and moving into next year?
Oh, I plan to stay in New York and hopefully grow the operation, but the reason why I came to New York is just Aqueduct, the amount of money and the short fields in Aqueduct is just... I understand that the winters are cold and everything. It just tough it out, but I intend on doing all my efforts to be 1, 2, 3 in at Aqueduct with however many horses I have.
What's next for T Loves a Fight?
Well, prior to him running, we had nominated him for the Morrison, the J.B. Morrison, or for the 6.5 for May 23rd. And we told ourselves, if the horse wins and comes out good again, the horse is running. And and a lot of people believe in a lot of time off between races. I feel if the horse is eating its food, feeling good in the morning, and is doing everything good, no heat, no pressure, everything's tight, run the horse. Run the horse. And Mike Leto Alvarado's agent called me. He says, oh, so do we have any plans? I said, you already know we nominated him for the stake, because I told him about the stake prior to the allowance. He's like, oh, well, the allowance is going to be easier. I said, okay. So now, he says, oh, so you're going to run him back? I said, as long as he shows up before entry day and he's showing me signs that we're a go. It'll be 10 or 11 days back, but he's been showing up every 12, 15 days back, so.
Got to run them while they're hot.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're a big believer in that.
I am, especially with sprinters. When they're sharp, you got to take advantage of it. And instead of training them, galloping them every day, why not run them?
Yeah. All right, Orlando, only a couple minutes left here in the program, but we always like to wrap up Trainer Talk by asking trainers to tell us a little bit about themselves that people might not know. And I know we've talked about a lot of things over the course of the last hour, the shrimp boat operation, your fishing passion, and, of course, the passion for horses. But what other things does Orlando Noda enjoy doing, or other hobbies that you might have?
I'd say more than anything, it's horses, and it's just looking into the future and helping like millennials like get into this sport, and that even though there's big time trainers, like we can still do it. Like there's still an opportunity for everyone. Just take the risk, and that's what I am. I've always been a risk taker. I've had plenty of businesses, some fail, some succeed. Right now, we're going to succeed, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully soon we'll have one in the starting gates in the Derby.
No, that'll be a great day. I will go to that Derby, no question about it. That'll be fun.
Well, Orlando, look, whatever you're doing, it seems to be working. You're focused. You are having a lot of success already. We want to wish you all the best moving forward, and hopefully get a chance to shake your hand when we make it up to Saratoga here in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. I greatly appreciate your time.
All right. Well, listen, all the best this weekend with Riot Worthy, and all the best moving forward with T Loves a Fight and the rest of the stable. Go get it done.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Orlando Noda here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Again, an up-and-coming trainer, just getting started with that career. you heard him talk about learning from somebody like Mark Cassie and some of the other trainers that he has observed while he's been in their shed row. And how many trainers have told us that, Jude, that one of the key factors is to pay attention to what these other trainers have to offer, because so often they'll be very open about sharing their knowledge and their experience with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way everybody learns, really, on the racetrack. It's the learn by doing method.
Yeah.
You got to get a horse because you have to make your own mistakes along the way. And then, you know, the older trainers, the trainers you respect, and even sometimes even a small trainer that's only had, you know, a modest barn in their lifetime can teach you some really important things. And then the business aspect is so important. Jay Robbins taught me a lot about that. I wish I would have listened to him more. That's for sure.
You wouldn't be sitting here next to me at the moment.
No.
Yeah, you tell me that all the time. There are people that helped you, but you were very good at paying attention to what was going on with these other trainers, guys like Charlie Whittingham, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie was great. Laz was great. Laz Barrera. You know, Bobby Frankel helped me a lot. He sent me clients, so... Yeah, everybody can help you.
All right, well, don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can listen at your leisure to this show and all of our shows. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios. For Jude Feld and for our special guest, Orlando Noda, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.